Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Sedona Patriot. We are a network of patriots in Arizona. We have formed an awesome organization called SedonaStandUnited.org. It spawned from the idea of ArizonaStandUnited.org, our mother organization. We are patriotic Arizonans who absolutely love our country and absolutely despise the tyranny and the acts of fraud, not just in the voting system, but in the whole entire, you know what, 19. So we are just really thrilled. We have organized. We love our country very much, like I said. Our first guest today on our show is Tim Canova. Some of you may know him as a politician in the mainstream, but he does not consider himself a politician. He considers himself a statesman, someone who is of the people, for the people, we the people. Remember, we the people have the power. And this is exactly what Tim Canova stresses in his campaigns. He's an amazing person. He has such a great story to tell you guys. I'm not gonna explain his story because he does it so beautifully. I just want to say that he is our first guest for our show. What a great introduction and first episode for our podcast at the Sedona Patriot. Please stay tuned. Listen to what Tim Canova has to say. He's really inspiring. He inspired me, and I hope that he inspires every one of you who's viewing this episode. Thank you so much. Here's Tim Canova.
So you've been a politician in Florida for quite some time?
Not too long. I was never really a politician. I'm a law professor. And in fact, I taught for 1 year at University of Arizona in Tucson when I was making a move, you could say. I had been out west in Albuquerque for 5 years and I was ready for a move. Had a visit in Tucson for a year and then went to Southern California, Chapman University in Orange, California. And I was there for 8 years before moving back to Florida. And I got back to Florida in 2012, and I never thought I was going to run for a political office. But in 2016, I kind of got swept up in things. I found myself living in a congressional district where our Congresswoman, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, was the chair of the Democratic National Committee. And she was clearly trying to help Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. She was supposed to be neutral and unbiased. And I was working with the Citizens Trade Campaign, and we were lobbying the congressional delegation against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. And this is related to my research and teaching interests as a law professor. And she was hopelessly bought. She had taken $330,000 from groups that wanted the TPP, and she voted for the TPP. She was the only Democrat in Florida's House delegation to vote for fast-tracking it. So we started looking for someone who would challenge her in the primary. It's a very gerrymandered district, very, very Democrat. And if she wasn't challenged in a primary, you know, then she could, and that's what was happening over the years. No one would challenge her in a primary, and she could speak out of one side of her mouth. And then, you know, when it came to what she actually did, voting and stuff, it was all very, very for big predatory corporate interests. So I decided to run against her in the primary, and the campaign took off. It went viral pretty quickly. And we raised in total $3.8 million, and it was all in small donations online. It broke all kinds of records at the time. Yeah, and we poured the money back in the district. I had four field offices. We were knocking on 12,000 doors a week. Our internal field numbers showed us crushing her at the end. I mean, not even close, just crushing her. And the polls closed. It was an August 30th, 2016 primary. And an hour later, they declare her the victor by 13 percentage points.
What?
So I didn't really believe it. And in the days following the election, I start getting contacted by election integrity analysts. And they start telling me the numbers don't add up. It's not plausible. They rigged the machines. So I put in a public records request to inspect the paper ballots. And I thought, you know, if we inspected the ballots in a dozen key precincts, we'll find out whether it's an accurate vote or not. And they dragged their feet. It took me months, and I finally filed a lawsuit to inspect the ballots under our public records law. And while the lawsuit was pending and very active, the supervisor of elections destroyed all the ballots.
What?
Felonies. I'm not kidding you. You can't make this stuff up. And to this day, she hasn't been prosecuted. She was allowed to retire with a $130,000 a year pension. So much of what they're finding was done to Trump was already done to me here on a much smaller scale. In fact, one of the analysts called me up a couple of weeks ago and said, he's somebody who had studied my races here against Wasserman Schultz, and he's studying, I think it was Trump's results in Michigan. And he said they found the same algorithm. The same algorithm used against Trump was used against me. For me, it wasn't Dominion. It was electronic election system and software, ES&S. But they're all the same. There's just a few electronic voting companies, and they're all so shadowy. I tried to find out who owns election systems and software, and it's owned by a private equity fund based in Omaha, Nebraska. You can't find out any information about them. Who owns the private equity fund? Who knows? It's so corrupt. And I left the Democratic Party. I'd been a Democrat most of my life, except for just 3-4 years when I was an independent. And I voted quietly for Donald Trump in 2016. You know, having just run in a Democratic primary, I didn't publicize it. And by 2020, I publicly endorsed Trump and voted for him. So a friend of mine, somebody who's a high school buddy, we ran track and cross country together, ran into Matthew in Sedona just last week. And that's how we got in touch with each other.
I love it. Matthew, can we hear you?
Can you guys hear me now?
Yay. Yeah. Okay. Yay.
I think, Tim, I obviously just came in midway through what you were saying, but did we get a rundown on what Tim went through with Debbie Schultz and all that in 2018? That was going to be my first question for you, Tim, was to, you know, explain who you are as a politician and things like that. So I didn't know if that's what we were talking about.
Yeah, I had talked a bit about the 2016 race and how they destroyed the ballots. The experts believe that they used an algorithm to flip the vote on me. And our internal numbers showed us beating Wasserman Schultz badly. I ran again in 2018. And of course, I was really trying to wave my hands and say, look here, what they're doing here, they're getting away with impunity. They can do it anywhere. They can do it in 2020. They did it against Sanders in 2016. I think they did it to Sanders in 2020 and on Super Tuesday. When I ran as an independent, it was a three-way race. The district is gerrymandered, so it was about 40% Democrat, 35% independent, 20-25% Republican. So I thought we had a real chance as an independent. Just days before the election day, November 2018, there was a Republican news outlet, the Floridian Press, that published a report reporting on a Republican poll that I had not seen. We had heard rumors of polls, and that poll they reported on had Wasserman Schultz and me tied in a dead heat of 34% each, with the Republican back in third in the teens, and about 1 out of 5 voters still undecided. So we thought we had, and that gave us a lot of momentum at the end, and we thought we had a good chance. The polls close. An hour later, Wasserman Schultz is the victor, and they have me at 5%.
What?
And get this, 5% in every demographic group. I got 5% among Blacks, Whites, Hispanics, males, females, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, 5% in every precinct, no matter size of the precinct. And the experts in computational science looked over the results and said, it's mathematically impossible. Mm-hmm. It's as unlikely as winning the lottery every day for a year. And still nothing happened. We had a Republican governor, Rick Scott, And we had a Republican administration in Washington. Jeff Sessions was the Attorney General at the time. And we tried to get them to prosecute the Supervisor of Elections for destroying the 2016 ballots. And it was an open and shut case. We had her on a sworn videotape deposition admitting to the ballot destruction. We had the ballot destruction order. You know, it's a clear federal and state rules that you got to maintain those records, retain them for 22 months, and they failed miserably. And we had a court that granted me summary judgment in my civil lawsuit. All we got were attorney's fees, nothing else. But the judge wrote a 10-page decision. He found that the supervisor had been guilty of violating numerous federal and state criminal statutes. And still we couldn't get the Republicans to prosecute. And my lawyer, who was an election lawyer and a Republican and well-connected, got back to me and he said, they're not going to help you. They have the same friends that Debbie Wasserman Schultz does, the same big corporate interests that have been running Florida politics for decades. They own both parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. This is what Trump's up against. It's not just the Democrats.
Yeah.
And at the federal level, my lawyer and I spoke to the acting U.S. attorney, a fellow named Benjamin Greenberg, and he seemed very excited. Again, you know, any second-year law student of mine could prosecute this case and get a conviction on the evidence we have. And Greenberg recognized it's a slam dunk case, and he sounded eager to take it and to prosecute. And this was in 2018, the middle of 2018, around May and June. And he went to Washington, D.C. for a week of meetings at the Justice Department with Rod Rosenstein, the same deputy attorney general who had appointed Mueller to investigate Trump. And they killed the investigation or the prosecution of the Broward election officials. He came back and suddenly he said it was too complicated a case. I mean, really, if you've taken evidence in law school, that's all you need. It's not complicated. They had a legal duty to maintain the ballots. They admitted they destroyed the ballots, open and shut. Mm. So, you know, Rod Rosenstein has since been purged, and Jeff Sessions is gone from the Justice Department, but who knows the Justice Department, what they're even doing now in terms of investigating and prosecuting election fraud in the 2020 presidential race. You know, Bill Barr was asked recently and said he hadn't seen any evidence that would overturn the election. And people are like, what, are you kidding me? So he's either playing a real interesting game of keeping his cards close to the chest and he's on Team Trump and he's going to come out with prosecutions at an appropriate time, where Bill Barr was always a swamp creature. You know, that's the world we live in, where, you know, you think you have people who have honor and integrity in these positions, and you find out over the course of time they prove their true colors. So, you know, again, I'm not a professional politician. I didn't make money running for office twice. I lost money. And I had raised a lot of money. I shouldn't have put a penny of my own money into it. And I was foolish to do that. I really hoped that justice would prevail in it, and it hasn't.
Well, you definitely have a story. And I think that story is worth it because it definitely plays... It supports the current narrative that's happening, and it's evidence. So, you know, anything that we can get is evidence for us to eventually take things down. But
people have to open their eyes, right? And that's the value of, I think, the experience I went through. Is it opened a lot of eyes here in Florida and even around the country.
Yeah.
You know, and I was endorsed out of the blue by Bernie Sanders in 2016. I didn't see it coming. I had worked on an advisory committee of his a few years earlier on reforming the Federal Reserve, but I had no contact with him since then. And I did endorse him earlier. I did support him over Hillary Clinton. And his surge in popularity was one of the things that gave me the faith that if I ran against Wasserman Schultz, there would be support for me around the nation and here in Florida. So he endorsed me out of the blue in 2016, and it gave the campaign a boost. But you look at how Sanders reacted to the way his own presidential campaign was undermined and the primaries were rigged against him. And, you know, how has he responded? By repeating the false Russian narrative that Russia colluded with Trump, sweeping all the DNC's rigging under the rugs, not calling out these electronic election firms for rigging elections. He's been a sheep herder for the DNC. And I certainly reacted the complete opposite way. I never really had a burning desire to live in Washington, D.C. and be a congressman. I had gone to law school there. I had worked on Capitol Hill for a couple of years when I was out of college. And I'm a happy law professor. I'm in South Florida. It's a good life. I thought I would try to serve in Congress and hopefully not for very long, but be part of some big change to clean up the rot that was happening in our government. And when I lost, I suppose I could have played ball and endorsed Hillary Clinton and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and been a good soldier, and the DNC would have rewarded me somehow. But that would have been the wrong thing to do. And, you know, a lot of the issues that animated me in running initially in 2016, Trump has been fantastic on. You know, he killed the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He gave us criminal justice reform. He hasn't started a new foreign war. He wants to put America first and rebuild here at home. You can't be strong in helping your neighbors if your own society is falling apart. So, you know, I've got family that hate Donald Trump, and they always talk about the way he tweets and what he says. And I'm from New York, you know, sticks and stones can hurt my bones, but names will never harm me. You know, it's like, get over it. So he doesn't speak with the Queen's English or something. Judge a person by what they do. And if you judge Donald Trump by what he's done, not just by what he says, but by what he's done, he's been an honest, hardworking, effective president in many ways. And if you judge the Democrats by what they actually do, by their actions, not their words, not their promises, they're horrendous.
Yeah. People would have, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, wow. So, you know, Tim, with everything that you've gone through in the last 4 years with everything and with Debbie Schultz and being, being someone who's been on the same side of voter fraud and all that, I mean, how does that make you feel right now? Is like, I call you, honestly, you're a politician. In my eyes, you won. In my eyes, you are the politician that this country needs right now, someone of the light, someone of faith. And so to me, Tim, you're definitely a politician. And in my eyes, you won already. And, you know, I think maybe now with everything going on, you may have that opportunity to actually help bring some change. So, you know, I think now might be your time. So, you know, I just want to know how you're feeling like as a politician through all this. And, you know, maybe in afterwards, you can explain maybe where you see this whole election thing currently with our president going. I see it going to the Supreme Court myself, but I would like your honest opinion.
Yeah, I do too. You know, I appreciate what you said, and I'll tell you, I often bump into neighbors here and people who live in the district who I don't even know, and they come up to me and say, hey, you're Tim Canova. I voted for you. I voted for you twice. You know, and I feel like what did I run for? I ran to be a representative. Mm-hmm. And I feel more representative of the people of this district than Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She represents some of the most predatory interests, huge corporate, terrible interests in our society. I'm just a law professor, a teacher. I'm representative of the common person, really. I don't see the word politician as a compliment. I know you meant it as one. You know, to me, they're a professional, almost parasitic class. Watching what happened to Donald Trump, it's brought up a lot of emotions for me. You know, on the one hand, I felt like Chicken Little warning that the sky was going to fall and, you know, pay attention. It's going to happen again. It's going to happen again. And I saw it happen again to Bernie Sanders again on Super Tuesday. And then watching Trump surge, I mean, he was surging before this election. It seemed like he was heading towards a very decisive victory. Mm-hmm. And then seeing the outcome and the way the Dominion machines were rigged, and a lot, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more that was done, of course, with the massive absentee ballot dumps and all of this, the statistically impossible election results in some states. And to me, it's like deja vu. It's like almost a post-traumatic stress syndrome, like I'm experiencing it again. And I certainly hope what will come out of this will be that the truth will prevail, and that the United States, will get rid of these electronic voting systems once and for all, and have hand-marked paper ballots that are counted by hand in public by the American people, and have elections that are transparent and verifiable. And if that's the outcome, then perhaps there will be opportunities for people like me to run for office again. As of now, I've had many people over the last couple of years call me up and tell me they're thinking of challenging an incumbent, and they think they can put together a grassroots campaign, and the incumbent is vulnerable. And it breaks my heart to tell them you don't have a chance. Even if you win, you're going to lose. They're going to steal it electronically from you. They do this as a routine matter now. And if we move to paper ballots that are counted by hand in public, then we get our political system back, I hope, where our representatives truly represent the people and not just those who are rigging the elections. As for where this is going, I'm heartened. I felt the whole time, and I still do, that Trump's going to win this thing. The lawsuit by Texas, I think, is a big one. And it's, as we know, almost 20 states, I think, have now signed on, and the Trump campaign is going to intervene as well. And it looks like it's grounded on equal protection of the 14th Amendment, the same way that Bush v. Gore was. I think there's a good chance that Trump could win in the Supreme Court. When I say Trump win, I mean the Texas lawsuit wins. The electors from several of those states are no longer counted. Then this has to go to the House of Representatives, where each state delegation gets one vote. And since the Republicans control 26 states and the Democrats 23, I think, I guess people assume that means that Trump will win in the House of Representatives. And I think that's probably the case. I do worry, of course, because there's so many corrupt establishment Republicans, whether any of those states would try to defect and go with Biden over Trump. So I do think the Supreme Court is likely, I shouldn't say likely, because it's hard to be confident of anything right now, but if I had to bet, I'd say the court hopefully will come out the right way. And that's assuming that one of those five conservative justices is not somehow compromised or fearful or blackmailed or, you know, whatever. I think what's happened in the last few weeks is it's revealed how almost every institution in our government has really been corrupted. So many Republican governors apparently have been corrupted by kickbacks from Dominion, by their dealings with Dominion. Some leadership of Republican legislatures, like in Pennsylvania, they seem just very establishment. They'd rather have Biden than Trump, I guess. And it has apparently shown the true colors of the Justice Department and the FBI. I hope it doesn't show a Supreme Court that's compromised. As of now, there are people who are saying the only major institution of government that's not been compromised is our armed forces. And, you know, there have been major executive orders that Trump has signed in the last few years that he signed pursuant to powers that were granted to him by emergency, national emergency statutes. And we've been in a national emergency for many months now. And under these executive orders, foreign interference in elections comes under one of those orders. And it would give the president and the military plenty of power to crack down on anyone aiding and abetting it, including the mass media through disinformation. So I don't know if that card is going to be played and when and how it would be. But I think everything's on the table right now. I have a hard time believing the U.S. military is going to just sit back and do nothing if it believes that there's been foreign election interference and that agents of a hostile foreign government basically are going to be installed in the White House, if that's the way they're looking at it. I have a hard time believing they're going to allow that to happen without firing a shot.
Wow, thank you so much for that. And yeah, you know, I think too, getting, just like President Trump says, like these politicians, and, you know, thank you for clarifying that on how you refer to yourself as a person. I think we need to go back into the times where it's we the people, we're statesmen and stateswomen, you know, more so than politicians. That's exactly what Congress was supposed to be. We the people were supposed to be Congress, the people were statesmen and stateswomen. So really, Tim, thank you for clarifying that. That is something that I need to get into my vocabulary as well, is get rid of the politician talk. Just like President Trump says, man, these politicians, because yeah, that's exactly what they are. They're corrupt people, politicians. So.
And look how long they're there for. Biden's been in Washington for 47 years, and you look at Pelosi and Feinstein and all of them. It's their entire working lives, it's like. And I don't think that's what was envisioned by the founders when they wrote the Constitution. And it wasn't my motivation when I ran at my age. I thought maybe I'll be on Capitol Hill for 4 years or 6 years. And maybe that's about it. If the problems can't get solved by a new Congress, let's say, within 4 or 6 years, they're never going to get solved. You know, and that's why this country has a great opportunity right now. To move towards real elections and not fake elections. And if there's a second Trump administration, he says he wants to clean out the swamp, and he started to do a lot of that in the first term. Well, at this point, the swamp creatures have really exposed themselves, who they are, and not just who they are, but to what degree they've engaged in illegal activity.
It's so interesting to hear you speak about how the election was rigged, even for you. And I led the campaign for the non-incumbent mayoral candidate this year in Sedona. Mm-hmm. And the same thing happened. And at the end, when we didn't win, we were like, what happened? And many people came up to us and said, something must have been rigged. It had to have been rigged. Nobody wanted that mayor to come into action again. And here, lo and behold, she's still in office. And right. No one's happy. No one is feeling like it's safe here in Sedona, even.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's
it's amazing. And you know, we had a couple of public forums in the last 2-3 years here in Hollywood, where I live, where we have flown in election experts from around the country. And including Benny Smith. Benny Smith's an interesting guy. He teamed up with a woman named Bev Harris on a film called Fraction Magic. And this is some years ago. It showed how these electronic voting machine companies, they tabulate their ballots in fractional terms, which allows them to allocate votes in illegal ways. Mm-hmm. And I'm not an expert, so I don't even do it justice describing it.
Well, it's like one vote is like a 13th of a vote versus some other vote for the Democratic side would be like a 64% of a vote. And then more of the 64% of the vote would come together and make more votes than the 13% of the vote. Yeah,
exactly. The way they aggregate them.
Right.
So Benny came here, and he's now an election commissioner in Shelby County, Memphis, Tennessee. And he showed the audience right on a big screen on his own computer. How with just several keystrokes, you could flip and tap anyone at any percentage.
Oh my.
So, and even the New York Times had an article about this in early 2017, which said it's a myth that these voting machines are hacker-proof. 98% of the electronic voting machines in this country are inherently vulnerable to outside hacking or insider manipulation of the software. 98%. So if there are people who have the means, the motive, and the opportunity to rig an election and get away with it, what's stopping them? Their moral compass, Come on.
I just feel like it's so stupid funny. It's stupid funny at this stage because it's like, how many of us like don't, like, how do you not know that this is happening right now? How do you not like put the dots together and say it's happened to so many good people that it's too, it's, you can't overlook it anymore. And so
there are politicians. I know a congressman who, Alan Grayson, who lost and then tried to make a comeback. And when he tried to make a comeback, the loss he suffered was very suspicious. And the election analysts believe the vote was flipped on him. There's Feingold from Wisconsin, who ran for the Senate. There's so many suspicious election results. And these candidates are usually informed by the election experts, the election integrity folks, of what happened. And they have a choice of going public or keeping their mouths shut. And it amazes me that most of them just keep their mouths shut. And
well,
I guess
people are afraid of what's going to happen.
They don't want to be called sore loser. They don't want to be called a conspiracy theorist. They want to have an opportunity to run to get again. So they've just got to, you know, play ball with the corrupt machine, so to speak. Yeah. And things aren't going to change that way. And this is what I admire about what Donald Trump is doing, mm-hmm. Is that he's fighting back. He's exposing it. I had the will, you could say, but not the means to overturn my election results. To try to change things. I had the will, but not the means. Donald Trump, it looks like he's got the will and the means, perhaps. And if it's not changed now, we're never going to have another free election in this country in the future.
Well, it's God's doing, right? It is the spiritual battle between dark, well, evil and light. And we know that. And so, all I'm doing is praying and coming into contact with people like you who are supporting the true narrative. And that's what I'm grateful for, because when you're on the right track, the right information comes and your discernment and your internal intuitive patterns let you know what the truth is. And if you don't still yet know the truth, that means that there's a glitch in the internal mechanism of our intuition and our connection with God. Otherwise we would know the truth. Yes. So I'm so thankful that you went through these experiences, even though they were kind of crappy, because what it does is it gives us a story, and it gives you a story, and it provides those who don't yet know yet and those who don't yet believe yet, a means of evidence, because you are just a regular guy. You're a person who has a good heart, who has leadership qualities that can support a city or support a state. And so, it's great that happened. I'm grateful that this happened to Kurt as well, because it provides a story. And these are all stories that come together that even support Donald Trump's story that the election was rigged and stolen from him, because we all knew he was going to win. It's not even a matter of if he was going to win. It was like he already won.
You know, I saw one poll that there've been a few polls out lately, so who knows how accurate they are, but one said that something like 86% of those Republicans who voted for Trump believe it was a rigged election. And I think that's at least 86% believe it was. And then on the Democratic side, one poll said 30%, another said 47% of Democrats believe it was rigged. But, and I've got so many loved ones who fall into this category. They voted for Joe Biden. And are they in the 47% who believe it was rigged, but they're willing to keep their mouth shut because they like the result? Or are they among the 53% or so who are so deluded to think that Joe Biden actually really won this election? So there's a lot of denial going on, but there are a lot of people opening their eyes. And I agree, that is the value of, I guess, my painful story, what I went through and what others have gone through. It's opened a lot of people's eyes. And what to do from there, I agree wholeheartedly with what you said. It's a matter of speaking the truth as best you can and praying. Because this is a fight between good and evil.
Yes, it is 100%. And, you know, I really wanted to read this. You know, Barry V, I know we were talking last night before we went to bed, you know, about disciples and things like that. And I really want to bring this to the table real quick. I don't want to go off topic too much, but I ran into this gas station clerk at the Circle K last night, and he had the book of Genesis. I mean, and I asked when I was praying up in the canyon, Bear V, you know, for some education on some certain things biblically. I asked for it. I get to Circle K, and this clerk just so happens starts talking to me about this. And I found this verse a little interesting. It's out of the book of Genesis. I believe it's Genesis 6, verse 4. The Nephilim, they're like beings that were descendants of the fallen angels. They were sons of the fallen angels. The Nephilim proved to be in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of the true God continued to have relations with the daughter of men, and they were born sons to them. They were the mighty ones who were of old, the men of fame. I found that interesting, the men of fame.
Well, you know, mine uses different words.
The elite, yeah. You know, and I found that very interesting that this verse was shown to me last night after praying up in the canyon for some guidance biblically, because I don't understand the Bible all that well because of all the programming. And so I said, you know, God, I don't have time right now, unfortunately, but I would like to receive downloads. And I'm very truthful with God. I really am. I'm like, I don't have time. I would like to receive downloads. And that's exactly what happened 30 minutes later.
Wow.
You know, I just want to give also the audience like an opportunity to understand that God is coming back, and or God has always been here, but you know, he's always been here. But in a sense, I feel like honestly, Jesus has risen, and this is all the work that we are doing on a larger scale than what happened even in the days of Jesus walking this earth. So I didn't want to go off topic. I just thought that was very interesting to bring up, that this verse came about when they talked about the men of fame. I see that as the elite that they're talking about.
Well, and these elites, I think, have a very predatory agenda that is a demonic agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really believe so. I think they are seeking to destroy humanity, to change the nature of what it means to be a human being. And this is their whole philosophy of transhumanism, is using artificial intelligence to change what it means to be a human being. It's one thing to use artificial intelligence to repair damaged tissue. It's another when you start changing human nature and free will and moral choice and making people into sort of Pavlovian beings that respond to incentives and disincentives that are administered by a central authority. This is the kind of warped, sick worldview they have, and they're rather advanced on the way towards their agenda. That's what makes this election so crucial, I think.
I just got inboxed a video that I haven't watched yet, but I've been doing human trafficking activism work for most of the year this year. And I've been following the National Tribunal of the International Tribunal of Natural Justice, and they talk about human trafficking and how it's all related to the elite and how all the money is dirty through this trafficking and selling of children and sacrificing of babies. And I just got a video today with Sasha Stone, who is the creator of the International Tribunal of Natural Justice, and a woman who does law in California, and they're talking about human trafficking and politics. Yeah. And it was like, just like you said, Matthew, that you were looking for an answer. Like you just asked and you were like, I'm ready to receive an answer. And that's what I said too. I was like, Lord, can you please share with me the connection between our politics and human trafficking? And I got that video this morning as I woke up. So there are some agendas and as you say, evil agendas that are underlying our politicians and our politics, which are mind control tactics that are leading people into some of these like weird behaviors that you wouldn't see in normal humans. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what's happening to our humans that they've become liars and deceitful people that are trying to steal the collective consciousness towards something that's evil versus something that's of true love and compassion and creation and sustainability and keeping humanitarian's nature up versus down.
Yeah, I agree. And that's such a sort of troubling feature of what's happened this year with the pandemic or plandemic is it's made millions of people so fearful. And once you get people into that frame of mind where it's everything is fear-based every moment, you know, to the point where shaking somebody's hand or giving a hug, they've got to be afraid, and they start living in isolation. It has a demoralizing effect, a dehumanizing effect, and that's what's got to be countered. I'm glad you brought up the human trafficking. I've watched some of those videos myself, and I've been aware of and vocal to some degree over the last few years about human trafficking, but I must say I never quite appreciated the scale of it until recent months, that this is one of the top money-making industries in the world, unreported income. And it's pervasive, it's virtually everywhere, and it's protected by elite institutions. And that's got to change. And of course, there's the Trump administration has made some good efforts in beginning to expose it and crack down, but there's a lot more work to be done. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering about your group. It's called Save Sedona.
It's called Sedona Stands United.
Nice. Yep. So we have a website now that was just launched a few days ago. It's called SedonaStandsUnited.org. We are the chapter, and Rachel is filing, they are filing this week, Bear V, actually on Friday for our 501(4)C or 501(3)C, however you pronounce it. So they will be filing, will be the chapter underneath ArizonaStandsUnited.org, which is our mother organization. So we've been doing a lot of work with them. We've been just here in Sedona locally been getting we've hosted a rally last week. We had about 200 people that showed up. It was very informal, information impactful. We had guest speakers from doctors to Kurt, who ran for mayor in 2020, and a lot of great information that came out of that. I believe, Tim, I sent you the BitChute video to that. So it has a lot of great information on there and exactly what we're doing. People around town are actually really loving what we're doing. We're kind of over this whole mask agenda and things like that. We are really building an awesome network. And then this Saturday, we have an event coming up called Unmask the Agenda Parade, where we're all going to get together, meet up. We're going to be driving through town on a route that we came up with yesterday through our local towns, Sedona, the Village of Oak Creek, Cornville, and Cottonwood. And we're going to support two local businesses here who have been supporting us. The cops are totally on board with this. They are giving us pretty much free rein to do these rallies, to do these events, because they've had enough as well. Yeah. So, and that's it. Our presence is definitely going to be known this week. It's going to be a train. It's going to be a caravan of just patriots who care so much about this community and, you know, and that's it. We've all been working together strongly as a community between law enforcement and the people, and we've solved problems together. This past weekend, we were able to solve a problem at our local coffee spot, which we had an incident happen where the cops showed up, and we all figured it out as a community, and everything turned out to be, you know, great. You know, we have a whole network here of people that are just really working as a community, and we're bringing that community type of conscious community back into, you know, the, if you want to call it the political arena or the, you know, whatever you want to call it, but we are bringing conscious community back. So that's what we're focusing on right now. We have a lot of great projects. I'll be working with, I guess, Tanya from the Patriot Party. They need about 35,000 signatures. They are going to birth a new party out of Arizona called the Patriot Party. So we're working on that. They want to get local and state people, politicians ready for the 2022 elections, and they want to introduce that party there, getting all the corrupt Democrats and Republicans, getting rid of them, and the ones who are like ready to make that switch and want to get out of those parties because of the corruption, get them over to the Patriot Party. So there's just a lot of stuff coming out of Arizona. You have a lot of awesome patriots here in Arizona. And, you know, as a Floridian myself and originally from New York, you know, I know what it's like in New York right now, especially in upstate New York. I know everyone looks at New York City as like dark and stuff like that, but upstate New York, very dark up there. Very, very dark. And it's, you know, it's, I'm so proud to call myself an Arizonan now. I really am. The state is doing awesome things, and it's part of the Four Corners region. So if you want to look into the Hopi prophecy, we all know the Four Corners region is very important time right now. You know, the trumpet fell in Utah. That's part of the Four Corners region. We have these issues coming out of here in Arizona. That's part of the Four Corners region of Colorado. So right now, Arizona is a huge, to me, in my own discernment, Arizona is very key to what is going to be happening moving forward, because you have a lot of patriots here that are not going to put up with it too much longer.
Well, and I think right next door to you, really, in California, it's so crucial as well. I was very skeptical of the California election results, not just this year, but in the past as well. You had Trump rallies right on the 405 in Los Angeles and Beverly Hills, all over the state. And it's seen as a bastion of Democrat strength, and I think it might not be in the future. And, you know, I had mentioned to Bervi that I had lived in Tucson for a year. I had taught at the University of Tucson for a year. I love Arizona. I've seen a lot of the state, and amazingly never made it to Sedona. So I hope in the future I'll get to visit you all there.
We would
love that.
We would love that. So, you know, hopefully we can plan an event to where you would want to come. You know, I think a lot of people are waiting till after the first of the year to start doing anything right now, but we would love that, Tim. You're a wonderful person. It's just great talking to someone who's been in this arena, who's been through this stuff, and it just feels good that people are starting to reach out to us, the common people, the people. It really gives us hope, and we're so thankful for patriots like you who are in this arena, who are close to our president, who's working on things to solve these problems. It's just almost like our voices are finally being heard for once. You know, like I said, you're working closely with President Trump on certain things, sending him emails and updates on election fraud and stuff. It just feels so good that our leadership is really, when President Trump says he cares about the people, you are a perfect example of how he cares about the people and getting this message out here. So really, our hearts are really with you on everything, Tim. So thank you so much for being just a great patriot in general.
Thank you, Matthew. I appreciate that. You know, like a lot of people, I've lost friends in the past year. The country is so divided. So many of my loved ones, they don't want to have a rational conversation, whether it's about the virus or about the presidential election. And it's heartbreaking to lose friends and to not be able to communicate with people you care about. But it's important that we realize that as some doors are closing for now, maybe not forever, other doors are opening. And I've made so many new friends during this last campaign, even though I wasn't a candidate. just new friends who are like-minded, who are questioning authority instead of just blindly obeying authority, people who are motivated by the highest ideals and by only good intentions. And that's what we have to embrace right now. And I really appreciate being invited on with both of you today and to making new friends like this.
Yeah, I'm grateful to even be, you know, at this stage having a conversation with you. I am like the least likely participant and the least likely to even like campaign for Kurt and to do the things that I'm doing. And so I know God's hand is on all of us and providing for us of what we need to stand bravely and with courage for our cities and for our states, because there is a lot of fear out there. And these conversations really help to solidify our trust in the ground that we're on and the God that we serve. And so, yeah, thank you so much for taking time for speaking with us today.
You're very welcome. Anytime. And I look forward to being in touch in the future and hopefully seeing you both in person, whether it's in Florida or in Sedona.
Absolutely, Tim. And we do have a YouTube channel. Our podcast is called Sedona Patriot. So it's just Sedona Patriot. So, you know, this video will be uploaded on there. And we really appreciate you really giving us the opportunity to interview you and to come on. This is pretty much our first show. So thank you so much. This has been a great first show. And, you know, so look for the video out there. I'll share the link with you. And if you want to share it in your community too with your following, that would be great. Because like I said, we're just trying to get the word out. And a lot of podcasters and truthers now are just, instead of competing with each other's channels, we are just all collaborating and supporting each other. And I have a few podcasters that I'm going to be speaking with tomorrow, one being Nicole Frolic. She interviewed me here in Sedona when she was in town. She lives in Denver. So I'm going to be speaking with her. So, you know, we're really trying, these light warriors here and these information warriors, we're just really trying to get this word out. And I'm going to put out there that our channel is not going to be censored because we have a lot of light behind us. So the light's going to win. So, you know, until I get a big following, they can't really censor me anyway. So this has been great. This has been an honor, Tim.
Thank you, Matthew. And thank you, Bear V. And let's stay in touch, and God bless you both. Yeah. And keep the faith. Yes. Keep up the fight.
You too. You too. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. God bless you too, Tim. Really. Blessings.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.